You're listening to Nakedly Examined Music, a podcast about songs and songwriters. My name is Mark Lintonmeyer. My guest for episode 200 is Michaela Davis, who I think to say is unique among my guests for having started with a degree in harp performance. You're right now hearing When You're Away, released on her Demos and Rarities collection from 2017. We'll be discussing Cinderella from And a Southern Star, her brand new release. That's her second full album released on a real record label. We'll then hear a single, Left Hand Path, released in 2022 on the compilation Spell Jams. And then look to her first label release, Delivery, from 2018. The song is In My Groove. We'll conclude by listening to another song off the new album, Leave It Alone. For more information, see MichaelaDavis.com. For more about this podcast, see NakedlyExaminedMusic.com. Make sure you're subscribed directly to the Nakedly Examined Music feed. And while you're at Apple Podcasts or elsewhere doing that, please leave a nice rating and review. Supporting this podcast through Patreon.com/NakedlyExaminedMusic will give you access to my detailed episode notes as well as an ad-free feed. Here we go. So I will play a little bit of When You're Away from recorded 2015 or so. Is that right?
I believe so.
Okay. But released on the Demos and Rarities 2017 album. I saw you had a release even back to 2011. How old were you at that time? Not to ask directly how.
In 2011, I was 19, I believe. Yeah.
I wasn't sure. You sounded very young on that. If this was a prodigy, if you were a 12-year-old at that point.
I was writing at 12 too. And I do actually have recordings from then, but that's in the vault.
Not that you would inflict on people. Well, you're signed with a label now. I mean, the new stuff sounds very, very good. So
thank you. Thank you. Yes, I am.
It puts people in a different perspective regarding their older stuff when the new stuff just sounds like so much money went into it. Whether you're even going to expose. I saw, well, this older stuff is on Bandcamp, but it's not on all the streaming services because you want the first impression of you to be the shiny new.
That's right. Yeah, I even have my first album ever actually came out in 2013, and I took it off streaming. It's not even on Bandcamp because I decided I didn't like it anymore when I was maybe 23 or so. So Delivery being my first album is actually a lie, but that's my first album on a label, I guess.
Sure, sure. Well, and you're creating scarcity. You're creating something for your fans to trade illicitly or whatever.
Some people have the first album.
I kind of wanted to get a sense of the shape of your career here. I mean, when you started being a harpist singer-songwriter, like, is that your primary instrument, or did you start on piano and then move to harp or something?
I started piano and harp at the same time when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. Then I started writing on piano first and foremost when I was maybe 11. And then I switched to writing on harp in high school because I was better at the harp than piano. I stopped taking piano lessons in middle school and kept moving forward with harp. So that's why I eventually switched over to writing on the harp.
So I was a upright bass player in high school orchestra. So you are the only person that has the instrument that's even harder to carry around than mine. As a singer-songwriter doing that, could you do this at open mics? Like, I'm just trying to picture somebody starting out being like, this is my axe. I don't carry a guitar. I'm not in that big line of people. This is something that immediately sets you out as, because it's normally a classical instrument. This seems like innovative just to use this in this format at all. Did you have any models that you were particularly looking at for this?
I started writing on piano just because all the notes are right there in front of you. And I knew of other songwriters who played piano. And then my friend's father gave me a tape of Joanna Newsom playing at a radio show. And I thought, oh, awesome. So I could do this as a harpist. I'm not sure if I thought, oh, it can't be done as a harpist, but maybe I just assumed since I didn't really know anyone else who did that, I should probably stick to piano. But when I discovered Joanna Newsom, I switched to writing on harp. And my drummer, Alex, who I've known since I was a kid, he used to tell me that as well. Why don't you write on harp? That's so cool. Nobody does that. You should be playing your songs on the harp, not just on the piano. So I was finally convinced. I still write on piano sometimes as well. But because harp is my primary instrument, it's the instrument I'm the best on. That's why I use it.
And I noticed, you know, even back in this 2015 recording, there's a lot of production layers. There's some, I mean, are you also in there doing the synth programming, or are you the young ingenue who has the producers come in and layer all the stuff, or somewhere in between?
So on that particular track, Kian, my guitar player, was playing Juno on that track. And that was before we even had a bass player. So Kian was playing bass on the Juno on the synthesizer. And that like synth solo at the end was just a demo that we recorded in Alex's basement when we were in college. And then we were tracking a full record in Nashville that never got released. And that song is from that album. And it was being produced by Conrad Snyder and Jeremy Letito in Nashville. So we were at their studio recording drums and harp and vocals, but we couldn't quite get something that sounded as cool as that solo at the end that Kian recorded in Alex's basement. So we just took it and used it for the song.
All right, well, let's get to the new stuff. Cinderella, the song you picked, it's been released as a single. It's going to be on this album, and A Southern Star, which calling it something and Southern Star, you've beat the streaming services. When I've registered with CD Baby, I have several albums that are like Mark Lint and the something, and then Mark Lint and the something else. But I don't want, as some of the artists that I've interviewed here, to have 10 different things that people have to search, you know, your name and some, you know. So just by, instead of having extended group name, I don't know what happens when you make a second album with this group and then you want to call it something else.
They've been my band for a long time, actually. But this album was going to be somewhat self-titled. I was going to name it Michaela Davis and Southern Star. But I decided like naming it that by Michaela Davis was a little redundant. So we decided, well, let's just name the album and Southern Star. So it's not my first time making music with this group. These guys have been my band for 10 years. But this specific album has a lot of songs written or co-written by Kian, my guitar player, which previously was not the case. So since this particular album is very involved songwriting-wise with everyone in the band, and particularly Kian, so we decided to name the album after the band, because Kian has a ton of songs and will eventually release an album under the name Southern Star. So then people can just make that connection in the future.
Any words about Cinderella before we hear it in full?
Let the journey take you on a wild ride. I love this song. I love the way it turned out. It's beautiful.
Pick your dress up from the tailor. Like
All right. So do these things start with a particular harp riff that your fingers are writing, or was that like that intro? An afterthought. You already had the song and now you're trying to figure out, like, was this even written on harp originally or was it written on piano?
So this particular song actually is a co-write with Alex, my drummer. And I've been writing with Alex for a long time. My last album, there's a handful of songs that either I started and brought to him to help me finish with lyrics and so on. But this song in particular, Alex started and I finished it. I first heard him playing this song around a campfire at his family's cottage. It must have been 4 years ago or so. And I just loved the song. I thought it was so beautiful. The verses and the bridge he had as the chorus. And so I asked if I could flesh out the song and rearrange some things and finish it. And he said, sure. So he sent me the lyrics he had and voice memo of him playing it. And it was written on like a fingerstyle guitar. And I can't remember exactly what the riff was that he was playing on guitar, but I know I changed it a bit on harp to make it more playable and make more sense to me on the harp. So the riff is a little different than he originally had it. And then I added a totally different chorus in there and moved his original chorus to be the bridge and kind of fleshed it out a little differently to tie it in with the chorus and the outro of the song.
Okay, that explains something narratively, because I was wondering that it sets up as if you're talking to the person who is being compared to Cinderella here, the woman, and then it moves to, in the chorus, something else. Go find another wife. This is not the same scene as, at least it doesn't seem like it's the same scene as this person getting ready to go to the bar. I mean, did you guys talk about like, what does the song mean? Or did you just, you have his lyrics and you just add stuff? Like how much actual talking and tweaking was there between you?
Yeah, basically it was pretty simple. I just added to what he had. But to me, the perspective is from a third party who's watching Cinderella and all the people who are enchanted by the illusion of this mysterious woman. And, you know, behind it all, Cinderella is just a person like anyone else. She's, if you think about the story of Cinderella, actually, she's just pretending to be a princess. And it's like, it's kind of a messed up story because it's like telling you everything's going to be fine if you just pretend to be rich and wear a fancy dress and clothes and then all your dreams will come true. But I was trying to, and Alex trying to spin it as like, well, that's just a story. And like, you know nothing about this person who you believe is Cinderella and they're just like everybody else.
Well, and it's set up like just in the first verse, putting on a dress makes the boys act like dirty sailors with nothing they can lose. Like, it's a very nihilistic sentiment to put right at the beginning of, you know, as if the situation, oh, they just can't control themselves. Like, just a sort of gross thing to put right.
Right. Yeah. Which I guess is just kind of referring to women feeling like they have to act a certain way or dress a certain way. And just like the way society sees women sometimes. That's how I interpret it.
Well, this makes sense that you have a drummer who is also a guitarist here, because the drum part itself and the bass part are so minimalist and musical that it's just, we're going to really commit to this groove, and that the drums are the thing that, okay, I'll do a little, you know, just to get us to the next line or something, but it's not going to be, it sounds like this is not a band that overplays.
No, they don't. I mean, I'm lucky. And as a harpist, it's pretty important to have a band that can come down for you. When we first played it together as a band, kind of coming up with a full band arrangement, Alex had the idea of having, you know, really four to the floor, just kind of like a Neil Young, very simple vibe for this song.
I'm glad you said Neil Young first, because I was completely thinking that this whole thing has a very Neil Young vibe, from rhythm to the even just the full-on CSN harmonies that come in the bridge, I guess. So is it a producer thing, or when you have this cool delay effects added, right, even from the beginning of the song to the harp, that we're going to have a normal reverb delay and then like, let's crank it up so you've got this extra little slapback thing. Like, are those purely mixed down tricks or are those sort of in the song when you would play it live even?
That happened in the mix. Our friend Mike Fridman mixed this whole album, and a lot of the normal effects on the harp that are just happening throughout this song are just from the pedal choices I was using when we recorded it live. But the extra delay, Mike added that in there. And I remember when we were at Tarbox Road Studios where this album was mixed, and Mike would spend hours mixing the song and then he'd present it to us and we'd all come in and listen to it. And I remember being so surprised by how much I loved this mix and all the little tricks he put into it, that this was not going to be the opening track on the album. But after I heard this mix, I said, I think this has to be the opening track on the record. It's so cool the way Mike mixed it and added in these extra ditties. I remember, I think after I listened to it for the first time, I'm like, wow, that is a hot mix. Like, it's making this song like hot. I didn't know it could sound this way. So yeah, the extra stuff was Mike.
Let me put in a little bit from 155. So this is, you've done the chorus once and you're getting, I guess, back into the next harmony with vocals. I mean, I assume that's actually in the arrangement, or was that just an overdub? Let me put in one extra giant gliss.
No, that was in the arrangement, but the extra delay, like the intense delay that was added, was by Mike. But yeah, when we were arranging the song, we decided to leave the drums and the whole band out for that first downbeat and have me just play a huge arpeggio up top of the harp, and then everyone comes in. So it just gives it something different, just like an added surprise in there.
Yep. I guess it's just that the bass is walking up. The bass is so restrained the whole time, just this bloop, bloop, the staccato thing, that it actually breaks. And like when a couple notes come out a little longer and there's some movement, it just seems like a much more dramatic and surprising thing than it actually sounded like when I played that clip there.
Yeah, Shane Stay is pretty tied down to like the same very simple bass line. And it's not really until the very end of the song where he finally comes out and like goes up the octave and does almost like this dub, like boo doo boo 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 boo. And at the very end, after the last chorus, Mike also like opened up the drums and put this really spacey effect on the snare drum. So it sounds like all of a sudden we're in a ballroom or something.
Yeah, so that was actually the original chorus. That's funny. Did you make it more dramatic or something? You know, having everybody sort of stop. That seems a more bridge. Like, you don't do that for every chorus. That's not...
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was. And I don't even know if that's how it was arranged, because when we were figuring out how to play it as a band, I remember for the bridge, I told Alex, I think it'd be cool if you just play fills the whole time and make it sound like disjointed and weird here. So, I mean, I'm sure it would have been played differently if that ended up being the chorus, but I'm not sure what it was about it. I just thought immediately, this sounds like a bridge to me. And I think I just wanted to go higher vocally and just do something a little different for the chorus.
Well, the fact that the bridge ends with your chorus, with the go and find somebody new, clearly if that didn't exist before, that's not how the chorus ended in the version that you received.
Well, actually, that was the bridge, and I took that last line and added it to the chorus. But then in the bridge, it didn't like keep repeating it like that, and I added some like different chords to make it go somewhere else, and then eventually go back to the beginning chords of the song. I don't remember exactly how Alex had it before, but he had that go and find somebody new, but I took that and kind of extended it and made it into the chords that I used for the chorus instead of however he had it, which I don't quite remember now.
Okay, so the Go and Find Somebody New was part of the original Cinderella setup, because you're not telling Cinderella to go and find somebody new, because at least in the Cinderella, in the story as told, you know, as opposed to just being used as a metaphor for anybody just going out to a bar or something, it's only the one person is going to get chosen. If you're Cinderella, you're on the meat market, you're at the auction block with only one buyer, I guess. So I thought maybe that was directed at the, you know, the prince character or something, or else I'm just taking this too literally.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's just one of those things where you can relate it however you want to your life. There's not really like a very specific meaning, like this is exactly what this line means or that line means. But I mean, it could be that, you know, Cinderella doesn't care about any of y'all. Like she's not leaving with anyone. So you might as well keep looking because she has no interest in anybody. It could be that too.
Sure. I bring this stuff up not to sort of pick at every line, but I'm always interested in like who's being sung to. If it's a third party, is it still like a third person song focused on this one character, or is it bringing in the point of view of the men or something?
Yeah, I think it's just a bystander that's watching everything happen, that's watching Cinderella, that's watching Prince Charming or whoever is in the scene. It's just from the perspective of somebody that's not like included in the storyline, but they're just watching it play out. Like when you have a friend who's telling you about their dating life or something, and they're telling you about all these people and things they do and people they meet, and you're just the listener and making your own opinions from what you hear or see.
And that contributes to what the mood is, right? If it's a, I'm singing to you to console you because you're in this having romantic troubles or whatever, you know, that's different than sort of this slightly dispassionate, everything sort of sucks. Like that's the kind of mode that I'm getting here. Like, such is the way of the world. It's a weary, I mean, that's anything that sort of sounds Neil Young sounds a little world weary here for
Yeah.
And you've talked about how you stretch this out by adding in a few different chords when you repeat Go Find Somebody New a few times. I like the way that you then end this with this sort of more intense distorted guitar. Fitting a distorted guitar in this palette is interesting. So this is 4:34. I guess it sounds like you wanted to have a violin W, but you don't have a violin in the band. So the guitar is doing something that sounds like put on a certain amount of fuzz to sound violinish. I don't know. Was all that overdubbed, or is this exactly what it is like when you do this live?
That is actually the pedal steel playing that line. And that was all tracked live. But in the mix process, Mike added that plasma fuzz to it. I can't remember exactly what the effect was. It was this like plasma rack where you could like at Tarbox, you could like see the static going between the tubes when he ran that pedal steel line through that effect. And that's what made it sound so distorted like that.
And I suppose the same goes to this sort of warble effect that ends the whole song. We don't need to figure out how exactly to end the song, because what's going to come out to the is a wah, 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 which is completely just added in the mix, right? That's not anything that you would do live. Or do you try to figure out now, like, that's so distinctively how the song ends that we're actually going to figure out how to do that?
No, we don't play anything live exactly like the studio version. But Kurt, my pedal steel player, is the sound man, effect man, who is really good at adding weird effects like that. And when we play the song live, we actually start Cinderella. I always have to tune a couple notes. So like Shane will come in with some bass and Kurt will just add this really nice lush atmosphere with whatever pedals he has, like whatever looping things he does. I don't know exactly how he does it, but it's really cool. And he adds like the bed of, it's just like atmosphere and random noises happening until I'm ready to go. And then he turns it down and I come in with the harp and then we're all together.
Is there a laptop on stage that he uses? Is it to that extent? No. Okay. So there's no Ableton. These.
No, it's not like tracks or anything. It's just all through playing something on the steel and then using pedals to like loop it and create different effects.
Yeah, since you bring it up, I can't help but come back to the harp and just as the logistics of dealing with a harp on stage. Like, it's hard enough with like a 12-string guitar. You have something where every single string, like, how long does this damn thing take to tune? And are you doing it multiple times during a live set?
Yeah, it takes a while to tune. I mean, not too long. I usually will tune it up pretty fast before we play, like 10 minutes. But sometimes when I'm playing in a different key, I just have to retune a couple strings because my harp is very old and does not stay in tune. I mean, harps have trouble staying in tune anyway. But with all the temperature changes, and even like from the beginning of the show to halfway through the show, the temperature is constantly changing. So the strings are always going out of whack, and I'll have to retune a couple notes here and there.
And do you get feedback issues with it? I know playing an acoustic, I had to make, you know, get a sound hole cover or something, or else, you know, especially you said how, you know, the rest of the band needs to be quiet enough, but still, of course, you're in. Do you just go in whatever PA they have, or did you like, no, I need this to sound actually good, and so I'm going to, you know, have my own little amp set up for this harp next to you, like a guitar.
Yeah, I have my own amplification, and I have a pickup that sticks to the inside of the harp, and I do cover some of the sound holes. On the back of the harp, there's some sound holes, and I cover up like the bottom half of them with a cloth, which I just started doing more recently, which seems to help with feedback. Because the drums are always set up right behind me. And no matter what, my pickup is going to pick up everything, like pick up the drums. I could even like talk into the harp and it'll pick that up. But the pickup I have is pretty good. So I've kind of dialed in feedback issues, and I have an EQ pedal attached to my pedal board. So I'll like EQ out anything that's ringing, which can sometimes be different from place to place that we play in. And I also more recently have been playing through a custom tuck and roll bass amp. So it's this huge cabinet, like an 8x10 cabinet with a custom head. And the tuck and roll cabinets and amps are pretty cool looking. The outside of them look like puffy material. Mine's a sparkly blue. And I just got two more that are champagne color. So now my bass player, Shane, is going to be using a custom tuck and roll as well. I haven't convinced the whole band, though. Everyone doesn't want to go through a custom. They don't want to quite Creedence Clearwater, but I dig it. They look cool.
It's not quite as many keys as a piano, right? I mean, it's only how many octaves are you working with?
It has pretty much as many notes, but strings, there's on my harp, there's 46 strings, but each string has three different pitches. It can be at any time because I have 7 foot pedals that change
selectively dampen. So you could.
Yeah, they don't dampen anything. They actually change a particular note from flat to natural to sharp. And then if I want to dampen anything, I have to do it with my hands.
All right. Well, I hadn't thought about the fact that, you know, you run into the same problem with if you're a lead piano player of, what do you do with your left hand? Do you stay? You have a bass player, so you don't need, unless you're the Doors and just fire your bass player, then you don't need to hold that down. But you're able to, as a solo artist, like pick the bass with your, it's still your left hand, right? Or are you a lefty?
It doesn't matter if you're left-handed or right-handed. When you play the harp, you play it the same way like you do a piano. I'm left-handed too, by the way.
Sure, you don't get a lefty piano and you don't get to do that. It's just harder.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I guess maybe because I'm left-handed, I'm a bit stronger with the bass side of the harp. But I don't know. That's how the harp is. That's how you learn it.
This episode is brought to you by the Jordan Harbinger Show, a top shelf podcast named Best of Apple in 2018. He's talking to professors, CEOs, authors, scientists, athletes, etc. There are upwards of 800 episodes getting into technology, politics, psychology, entrepreneurship, and more. I listened to number 695 with Malcolm Gladwell about deception and imperfect puzzles and other things. And number 830 with Terry Crews, the actor, talking about empathy and growth and forgivness. JordanHarbinger.com/start groups episodes by topic. So if you want to do a deep dive on Putin or financial crimes or relationships or the mafia, all the stuff is grouped. Jordan is a very good interviewer. He gets his guests to share stories that you haven't heard. He pulls out tactical bits of wisdom in each episode designed to make you a more informed, critical thinker. You can't go wrong with adding the Jordan Harbinger Show to your rotation. It's incredibly interesting. There's never a dull show. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Let's get the second song out there, Left Hand Path. So this was released as a single in 2022 and on this collaboration album. What is the story behind this song and your creation of it?
This song is a recycled song from about 10 years ago. I first recorded a different version of this song when I recorded When You're Away, and it was going to be on that album that I made in Nashville, and it had a different name. The lyrics were a little different, and it was kind of forgotten about. So Chris Funk, my friend who's in the Decemberists, approached me about a year ago and asked if I would be interested in writing a song for the new Dungeons & Dragons campaign and let me pick a chapter from the new campaign to write about. And I chose to write about this vampirate named Grimzod, who has no left hand and sails on a ship, and you don't really know if he's good or if he's bad. So that's the backline, the storyline that I had to work with. And I immediately thought of this old song that I had written that nothing ever came of it, and just thought that those chords and the overall song would be so cool to use for this. And then I could finally actually finish the song and put it out into the world. So I took those chords and changed the lyrics basically to write a song like loosely from the perspective of somebody falling under the spell of somebody that you know is probably bad, but you just can't help yourself and you do it anyway.
Forget what's in the cards. I'll go.
would this start out with that harp riff that starts the whole song? Like, was that the genesis of the whole thing? Your hands writing this in this time signature?
Yeah. So this song is in 5. And at the time when I wrote this progression and time signature, I was really into Sufjan Stevens. This was in college. And he had recently put out this album called The BQE. And it was super electronic. And there were a lot of different time signatures. And I was really into the math of all of it. And I can't remember which song it was, but he had a song that was in 5. But not only that, there were 5 measures in each phrase and then 5 phrases in the verse. And, you know, people automatically will write in 4 or write in 3. And I wanted to write a song in 5. So I kind of copied that and wrote a song that was in 5. And then each phrase has 5 measures. And then I'm pretty sure the first part of the verse has 5 phrases before it goes into the pre-chorus. So I had to kind of like train myself to make it all work and like map it out so that it made sense and flowed in a way where you can't really tell that that's happening. And after it all came together, like I don't even think about it anymore. But I remember when I was writing that, I had to teach myself to play it as so.
When you start out with a riff like that, there's a gravity towards, okay, now when the drums come in, for instance, we'll go into 4/4. Because in 5, it's just, we're doing the normal thing and then throwing out one little extra thing. And the third, you know, either you're cutting something off if you're thinking of it in 6, or more likely, I mean, what everybody knows is take 5, which is a much slower 5. We're going to 4/5. You know, that we have the 4, but this is like 5/8 rather than 5/4, or at least a really fast.
I think of it as like, you either have like 2 and then 3, or 3 and then 2. So as it, when it starts out, it's 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, which it might be like that the whole time. But when the drums come in, it's still in 5/8, but it goes to like phrases, but then it goes to like 4 measures in each phrase instead of 5 measures in each phrase.
Like, it definitely, not only, you know, are you just adding instruments and changing the chords and things, but, you know, it sounds like this can't still be in 5, you know, it's shifted to another.
Yeah. It's in 5/8 the whole time. It just like changes how many measures are in each phrase. So it is pretty tricky. And then once it goes to the chorus, it's back to being in 5/8 with 5 measures in each phrase. And then there's 5 phrases in the chorus. So everything's 5/5/5/5.
And also just some more jazzy chords than you have. And I mean, even just in that intro riff that you have the little chromatic twist at the very end of it.
Yeah, I think that's the same in the verses as it is in the chorus, but I just play it differently. Yeah, it has that, the end goes somewhere else.
Let me insert a little bit of the chorus here.
That's the pre-chorus, I guess, what I would call the pre-chorus. And that is some different chords there. You're right. If you can hear it at the end of like each phrase in the verse, I change to foot pedals on the harp, and I do it very intentionally so you can hear the bottom notes go boom. And I'm not playing that. That's my foot pedal. That's my feet changing, essentially changing.
Interesting.
Because I'm changing the F pedal and the C pedal. So I slam both the pedals down with my feet. And then that creates the key change or the chord change.
Well,
okay.
So you get to have a little bit of note bending. Is it Don't Stop Now off the new album that is an actual blues song where your guitarist gets to, you know, bend and do the bluesy stuff, but you don't really get to do that? Or are you even on that song like, no, I can do that too because I'll use the foot pedal to...
Yeah, you can to a certain extent, but you can't really do that like a guitar can. I can like with single note with my thumb, I can like push in like at the top of the string and kind of make the pitch bend a little bit. But yeah, you can't really do it as you can on a guitar.
Sure. And I guess that's the only way you could do vibrato as well. I mean, do you do that on multiple strings at a time ever so that you can like play a chord and vibrato that?
like a whammy bar.
You can really only do it. Yeah, I can really only do like one note at a time. But there are whammy bar pedals. I've been thinking about that recently. Getting some sort of pedal like that where I could actually play a chord and like use a whammy to make that illusion, like make the notes.
I also haven't noticed you just putting the harp through a massive amount of distortion and playing a solo that way. But I don't know that I would notice if it was the harp, you know, because it would just sound like it could be guitar. How much have you messed around with effects in terms of even MIDI triggers or whatever, such that, you know, this song has some crazy synth stuff, digital rumbles. Let me 120. Again, is that all just producer, you know, during the mix adding extra things, or is that even the kind of thing that you would potentially do with a harp, just changing the sounds around yourself?
On this song in particular, Kurt Johnson made all those extra loopy loops and extra noises on his pedals, or whether it was with guitar or just through some sort of loop pedal where he just started with like any noise and then messed with it on a pedal. And you can do effects through any guitar pedal on a harp too, which I run through a wide variety of guitar pedals, but I'm not really like messing with them too much with my hands while I'm playing because my pedals are on the ground and I'm up here. Sometimes I will like play a note and then go and like change the switch around the knobs
stressful.
On the pedal so it'll like get warped. Yeah, sometimes it can go terribly wrong, but if you're trying to make it sound wacky anyway, it doesn't really matter. But I mostly am running through carbon copy delay and a Univibe vibrato pedal, and then I have a reverb pedal that's on all the time. That's Midnight 30, and that just makes the harp sound a little, it's almost like a boost and makes it sound like a little reverby and bigger and bolder. And then I have another pedal by Midnight 30 that's a delay pedal that's, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it has this like crazy effect where if you press one button, it'll turn on and just do the normal delay thing. And then it has a second button. If you press it, it'll totally warp the pitch and make it like go up and down. And it sounds pretty crazy. One last pedal I have will actually change the pitch of a note and will make the note pitch up like a third or a sixth or an octave. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, I can make the harp sound like a lot of different things. It's fun.
The rhythm section suddenly gets very sprightly and you had this, ooh, you know, do you recall anything about the sort of choices that went into that arrangement, that section?
Yeah. So I remember I had that melody and just thought it'd be fun to throw that melody in there somewhere, but we wanted to have like a breakdown section where things get a little wild. And when we recorded the song, it started with bass and harp, and Alex and I recorded it live at our friend's studio, Submarine Sounds, in Rochester, New York. And he just played a drum solo. So when we recorded it, it was just drums and harp. And he just played a drum solo, and that was that. And then we sent the song to Shane next, and he recorded the bass himself. And I told him, don't be afraid to go crazy, do whatever you want with this song, especially the bridge. So right before those oohs, there's like a drum and bass solo. Mm-hmm. And Shane just wrote a bass solo to Alex's drum solo. So he took the rhythms Alex was playing and just wrote his own thing on the bass. And it's so cool. I remember the first time I heard it, I called Shane. I was like, what? That, whatever you did there was so awesome. And then the oohs come in and Kurt comes in with some guitar and extra sounds. But that part right before that is pretty exciting. It's fun. And I think Kurt also had some other sounds going on that like ramp up and then all cut out.
Sure. Yes. This electronic stuff that we can go to what would be a very nice harp spot, but let's put all this freaky, not quite pitched synth stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Because my thought process through that part was going back to the storyline of this vampirate. that's going on some journey to like get his ship back. There's a battle. So in my head, I thought, this is the battle. And I think I told the band, like, this is where the battle happens. So just make it sound crazy.
And so this was all within the scene of this fantasy character, not just that you have, oh, I want to play, I'll roll that. You mentioned dice rolling in a D&D themed, you know, was that just like a little cheeky meta bit or?
Yeah, it was almost by accident because it's like, well, the phrase left-hand path is an old phrase. It's like you either go the left-hand path or the right-hand path. And the left-hand path is like black magic and it's bad and malicious. And the right-hand path is white magic and it's good and benevolent. And so I thought, because this vampire doesn't have a left hand, and that's how left-hand path came up, and magic, it all just started tying together and just all grew from those ideas.
All right. Well, you sound pretty comfortable writing in this vein. I don't recall. I mean, I guess we mentioned Cinderella in the other one, but it's still a very down to earth, you know, it's just a metaphor for normal romantic relations or something. How far into the fantasy realm in terms of, you know, are most of your songs sort of autobiographical or at least talking about stuff you observe among normal people, or is there some subsection of them that the imagination is the only limit?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess it depends. A lot of it is autobiographical or about like something that's happening in a friend's life, or I haven't really done much writing like pretending I'm a character. So Left Hand Path was particularly fun to write, and it has inspired me to do more of that in the future, because it's just, there's endless possibilities.
Well, and it's also just stylistically, I don't know if, you know, again, that this subject matter, I guess you just thought it fit very well with this prog jazz thing that you'd written, which is very out of character if you're sort of selling yourself as, this is sort of a Grateful Dead-esque country thing. I guess even adding the Grateful Dead-esque, and I say it because I've seen you do like Grateful Dead covers with this band on here, that opens up a realm of psychedelia and things, that it doesn't have to be just like conservative country in any way, you know, that would be suggested by that very straight ahead rhythm section part on the first song. You know, if everything had to be, I don't know, is your label intrusive enough that could you have put Left Hand Path on the new album and nobody would have cared, because it's your deal and you could do what you want?
Yeah. So actually it's funny you mentioned that, because Left Hand Path and that whole album, which is called Spell Jams, and I wrote one song on the album, but there's many other artists that wrote a song for this album. That came out on Kill Rock Stars, which is my label. And when Spell Jams came out, I was not signed to Kill Rock Stars yet, but I've been a fan of this label for a while, and I thought, okay, here's my in. So I told Chris to put in a good word, and I contacted Slim from Kill Rock Stars and basically said, hey, you put out one of my songs on Spell Jams and I have a whole record that's done. I'm looking for a label and would you like to put that out? So then they finally listened to the album eventually and decided to put it out for me. And they have been particularly awesome with letting me go my own direction. And so, yeah, if Left Hand Path was on the album, I guess they would have been cool with it, because they put that song out previously.
All right. Well, let's get back to your other major label debut to Delivery 2018. You chose the song In My Groove, one of the singles from that. Any words about where you're at with that? You know, there's going to be an obvious sonic difference, but this is still the same band basically, right?
Yeah. Same drummer and bass player. Mm-hmm. I wrote this song a very long time ago, right after college. I moved to New York City and I was there for a year. And then I moved back to Rochester and was kind of feeling directionless and was trying to figure out where I fit in life and music scene, et cetera, et cetera. So that's when I wrote this song.
Thank you.
All right, so very pretty intro riff, because it has that sort of, I don't want to say conservative, but, you know, acceptable mainstream country delivery, but you got this little peppy rhythm section to start it off that makes it sound like it's going to be a little, not hip-hop, but you know what I mean, that I thought it might be drum machine, but it's clearly not. It's just very tightly compressed such that the snare does not ring out or anything. It's just a the first time I took an album into an actual studio, they're like, every time that the snare plays, it's going to trigger this electronic snare that we're going to put over it so that it sounds really consistent, more consistent than the drummer actually played. I mean, is that the kind of stuff? Do you know how this sound came about? Why it sounds quite that radio ready, let's say?
Probably because it was recorded and produced by John Congleton, who is amazing. And that's who Rounder set me up with to record my album Delivery. And we recorded this, I think this is one of the first songs we recorded together in Chicago as just like a test to see if we should do the whole album together. But yeah, I mean, the way John records and mixes things is very tight and it just sounds so crisp and clear. But that is Alex playing drums there. No triggers.
We're going to do this little turnaround with a kind of strangely pulled back guitar sound. Any idea of, you know, that seems like that's the place where the lead player gets to stick out, but it's actually very compressed in so that it just flows right over that. Any thoughts on your choice of that as a turnaround?
I honestly don't really remember. Okay. It was just like, how do we get from point A to point B? How do we get from the verse to the chorus? And I think that's a pretty like common thing to play, like switching gears from one section to another. I can't think of any song in particular, but I know that happens all the time. People have like some sort of turnaround like that. And Alex was actually playing guitar on this as well. He played drums and guitar on this song when we recorded it.
Any thoughts about the very different approach to lyrics, presumably, that you had way back when writing this?
This song was kind of a stream of consciousness, and it was written in the course of like maybe a day or two. And I was just feeling frustrated and didn't know where I was headed, but decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to write a song to help myself remember. Everything's going to be okay. I'm just riding the wave. I'm just going with the flow. I'm in my groove.
I mean, I guess there's something more immediate about this one than by the time we get to Cinderella, where which is also kind of a bummer in the same, but this is a not such as life, what a bummer romance is. But despite the fact that I'm clearly have some complaints about the partner in question here, you've got your place to retreat to. It's still a positive song.
Yeah. It was essentially about how living in New York City didn't work out for me, not a person in particular. It was just about moving back to Rochester. And I felt kind of defeated because after college, I moved to the city and just thought, this is what you do. You move to the city and this is how I'm going to make it. And I'm going to meet people here and things are going to pick up for me. And it was quite the opposite. I went there and was struggling super hard. I could barely, you know, afford rent and food and didn't really feel like the world opened up for me. It just felt like it was closing. So then after a year, I moved back to Rochester and just thought, oh man, I'm just, you know, one of those people who just had to move back home and woe's me. But I soon started to realize that it was the best thing that could have happened because that's where my support and my community was. And there's plenty of great things happening there. And my band was there and it was the right place for me to be in that moment. So it's just funny how things work out.
We're going to have this interlude again, kind of strangely engineered, but so this, it's the harp that jumps out most of all, even though there are, what, three of you playing basically the same thing in unison, or, you know, at least playing off each other with the oohs. And there was always the question sort of, okay, we got our melodic content out. How long is this song going to be that you managed? Yeah, well, the song that we're going to introduce for the end, you had quite a bit, you know, it's over 7 minutes. This one is on the conservative side as this goes, like that we're not going to have a solo. I mean, how are you, like, when the band plays live, are there long groove sections where, you know, you're going to solo and you're going to pass to the lead guitar and you're going to just stretch this thing out?
Yeah, especially with older songs, they've evolved a lot. And even though Alex is playing the same like shuffle beat, but during that section, that instrumental section, now when we play it live, Kian takes a more extended guitar solo and then we come in with the oohs. Within My Groove in particular, it's still like a tight, just like pop song, short when we play it live. And it's good for us to have those shorter songs because we do extend a lot nowadays. We take old songs and stretch out the end or stretch out the beginning or stretch out the solos where I'll take a solo and Kurt will take a solo and Kian will take a solo. So it is nice to have these shorter pop songs in the mix where everything is planned out and the solo is always the same length. But it's not like that with other songs, especially the last one you're going to play. That one, we never know where it's going to go.
Sure. Well, so, I mean, this one, it has a definite ending that it's just back to you and harp and ends on a nice major chord, such that that seems like a good place to come back to however long the journey was that you could have added, you know, whatever. But now it's going to get intimate and it just a little thing to cap it off, as opposed to sort of a trash can ending, which I, you know, is sort of the standard way that a jam band might end a thing, you know, which I would imagine on harp, what, you just gliss randomly until.
Pretty much. Yeah. If we're going to end a song like that into just like dissolving into noise, which we do sometimes. But yeah, Within My Groove, it always just ends with me coming back to the first line of the song, just harp, and we have pedal steel on it now, which is really meant for this song. I mean, I wish if I could go back in time, I would record it with pedal steel because it does sound so good with this tune. But, you know, it's never too late. Maybe we'll put out a live record or re-record this song.
Well, let's introduce that last one. So this really moves some places, and this has got the super synthy part. I mean, this is why I was asking, like, how, so are you, again, are you diving into Ableton? I don't know what software people use to create these synth soundscapes these days, or is that other people in the band that are doing these kind of things?
So this is the last song on the new record, and Southern Star, and this is the only one where we did go open up part of the song, part of the session, and record new material when we were mixing it. Because it had a long ending and we didn't really know how we wanted it to end. We were thinking maybe we wanted it to fade out, but Don't Stop Now is right before this song and that fades out. So we didn't want to have two fade outs in a row and we wanted it to get really weird. And I can't remember whose idea exactly it was, but at Tarbox Road Studios, they had these pedals that were reactive to light and they just made the weirdest electronic noises. And I think while Mike was mixing a different song, the whole band was in the live room, like down the hall, just messing around with these pedals. And also, I think I was running my harp through a synthesizer pedal. So
that's what I was, okay, was getting at before, because that's the, there's no limits to the sound that can come out of the harp because now you're.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, I don't have that pedal. That pedal was at the studio. So we were just messing around and having fun. And then John Fridman, Mike's brother, said, hey, let me just record this because this is really cool. So he just set up some mics and just let us go off and do our thing. And we had like maybe 20 minutes of that. It was me playing harp through synthesizer pedal, just playing random things. I don't remember if there was any concept involved. And then Alex, I think, was using one of those guitar pedals that's reactive to light that was just making all these wild, just like synth noises. And Kurt was playing some synth keyboard. And then Shane was using some app on his Nintendo Switch to play. So I actually credited him on the new album as playing bass, singing, and I credited him as playing Nintendo Switch as well, because it's true. He was using it in that particular moment on this song. So we gave that material to Mike and said, hey, maybe you can add some of this into the end of Leave It Alone. And so he brings in those moments like while the guitar solo is happening, but then, you know, fades it out and fades into this moment where we're just playing whatever we're playing, and then fades that out and fades the guitar solo back in. So it creates this moment of like, say you're in a bar watching a live band play and there's a long rip in guitar solo happening, and then you decide to go outside for a smoke, and you go outside and it's a completely different scene out there. You know, it's nighttime, maybe there's neon lights and you're listening to like the weird music that's playing at the hole in the wall restaurant right next door. And then you finish smoking your cigarette and you go back inside and the guitar solo is still ripping and you're back in that world.
Well, this was very cool and a cool way to end this album. I guess just before we go, are any other things that, like, I noticed what you guessed it on harp for a song by Language I was listening to. It seems like a very in-demand thing. Like in fact, I don't know how long it's been since like you played with an orchestra or something, but it's like, it seems like you have a fallback gig that there's call for harp guest spots probably on any number of things. I mean, is that something you're giving significant time to, or was that more of a thing you tried in New York City when probably there was more demand immediately for, I need somebody to come play harp on my song?
Yeah, it's just slowly started happening over the years. You know, you meet more people and they find out you play harp and they say, hey, I want you to play harp on my song. So I do a lot of session work. I just did some session work yesterday for a really cool project a friend is putting together and he wanted harp on it. So I love recording harp on other projects, and sometimes it leads to more than just one song. And in this case, the song I'm guesting on was Circles Around the Sun. I toured with them for the first time last year. They asked me to add harp to one of their tracks on their new album because we were going to tour together. And after we did, we're all very good friends now, and we're actually working on some more music together that I'm very excited about. So that's a cool one. It's just instrumental, no vocals. And that's always fun to play when the harp can just come out and be featured.
Well, again, very fun listening to all your stuff, and good luck with it. It sounds like you got a really supportive band environment right now and a label that's working for you, and just hope it takes off in the way that you would like.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having this interview. It was really fun to talk about these songs.
All right, here is Leave It Alone.
Thanks so much to Michaela. Check out more of her stuff at michaeladavis.com. That's M-I-K-A-E-L-A Davis. You can see it in the episode title. I hope that if you enjoy this or any of my other guests, that you will support them in some way, not just by perhaps listening on Spotify, but, you know, go to the Bandcamp page, put a few dollars in the hat by buying a song, buying an album. If you want artists to continue to exist and you have some kind of disposable income, there are worse ways you could dispose of it. Speaking of, you can support this podcast by going to patreon.com/nakedlyexamined music. But whether or not you'd like to do that, I would appreciate if you would send this episode, send other episodes you like to family and friends, post them on your social media. You can follow me on Twitter and retweet my Nakedly Examined Music tweets. You can follow Nakedly Examined Music on Facebook and share those posts around. You can find all the links to the social places as well as to the location of the Nakedly Examined Music feed on Apple Podcasts or other places by going to nakedlyexaminedmusic.com. My next interview is with Ivan Neville. Yes, he is one of those Nevilles. He's the son of Aaron Neville of Neville Brothers fame. And Ivan is awesome. So please come back for that. I have some other great stuff laid out ahead. Hope you stick with me. Hope you're having a good summer. Keep on musicking. Until next time, this is Mark Lintonmeyer signing off.